Hello, and welcome to the 2012 Integrated Marketing Virtual Conference. I'm Thorne McGee, Editor-in-Chief of Target Marketing, and I'm proud to welcome you to the Spotlight Integrated Email Session sponsored by Acton Software. In a moment, we'll hear from Reggie Brady, President of Reggie Brady Marketing Solutions, a long-running columnist in Target Marketing Magazine, and one of the foremost experts on Internet direct marketing and email marketing. But before Reggie gets started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of this session. First, if you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to Reggie. We'll be addressing select questions later on, but you can send them in at any time. Also, after the session is over, Reggie will be spending some time in the networking lounge. You can ask her some more questions then for about 15 minutes or so. Please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all the widgets and bells and whistles on this console, and check out the Tips for Attendees widget to learn how you can customize your viewing experience today. Finally, if you leave the session at any time or would like to view it again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show today. We'll have that on demand and up and running for 3 months, beginning on Monday, August 20th. And now, without further ado, please welcome Reggie Brady.
Why, thank you very much, Thorin. I am delighted to be here. And let's talk briefly about the agenda. We really have a limited time for this session, so the agenda looks short, but I promise you that we'll cover a lot of ground. We'll start with some of the challenges of integrated marketing just to set the stage. Then we'll look at examples and also some mini case studies of how email integrates well with other channels. And I'll close with a look at integrated business-to-business campaigns. Sorry, I'm not pushing right. Here we go. Since I assume you've all been participating in this virtual conference, you already know the importance of integrated marketing. I like to call it the Holy Grail. And it's not just about email. It's about how email plays well with other channels, and that's where you get the big payoff. I'm sure you're all familiar with the purchasing funnel, where a prospective customer moves from awareness of your brand, products, or services through various stages that ultimately, hopefully, result in a purchase. So looking back about 15 to 20 years ago, before widespread use of the Internet, the purchasing process was very simple, as you can see at the bottom of the slide. However, things have changed, and today there are many paths and channels a prospective customer may take in the buying process. These channels are exploding, and this is only a partial view. You've got online channels, offline channels, you've got the mobile up and coming. So for multi-channel marketers, there are many channels that you need to master. And at the outset, you don't know what's going to stimulate interest, but to be effective, you need to be where the potential customer is with marketing efforts that will motivate them and then move them through that purchasing funnel. Here's a slightly different depiction of the purchasing funnel because it moves beyond the initial purchase. To orchestrate a total customer management approach, you also need to onboard them after they become customers or cement that relationship. Then cross-sell and upsell, stimulate loyalty, and ultimately, hopefully, turn them into a brand or company evangelist, or, in another case, you may need to win them back. People in the purchasing funnel have channel preferences that will change over time depending on where they are in the decision process. Using a B2B approach, in the beginning of the funnel, the awareness stage, marketers are often dealing with someone charged to research potential solutions, so white papers and high-level overviews are important. In the middle consideration phase, where the prospect is evaluating vendors, customer case studies and in-depth information is important. And when the prospect is ready to buy, spec sheets and detailed technical information could play a major role. So the marketer's challenge is to reach customers at the right time with the right message with the right channel or channels. Since we do have so many channels to manage, I want you to think of yourselves as a maestro conducting a symphony, because it's all about orchestration, finding the right balance of communication in terms of frequency and messaging, identifying the channels in which the customers want to be contacted, ensuring that all your messages are efficiently tied together to create the strongest impression of your company, and to maximize your investment in each individual program, you've got to have good data and take the time to analyze what's working and what's not. Before we leave this introduction, I just wanted to have a very simplistic approach to multi-channel marketing. In the beginning, at the bottom of the slide, you're casting a wide net using various channels. You need to motivate that prospective customer to actually raise their hand and say that they're interested. Then you can move to target marketing based on what you know about that individual, where they came from. And as they act or react to your campaigns, you can move them up to relationship marketing. And finally, if you've orchestrated everything properly, you move to true multi-channel marketing with the right offer to the right person at the right time with that right mix of channels. Here's a picture of Glenn Sankey, the former CEO of Urban Outfitters. I thought this quote was very telling. Multi-channel customers spend 2 to 3 times more than single-channel customers, so tying email and other channels together is certainly important. Customers who engage with the company across 3 or more channels spend 6 times more, so if you can really get them into multiple channels, that's wonderful. So now let's look at some particular examples. And first, I'd like to start with direct mail and email, which are a powerful combination. Initially, you can use email, particularly to your customers, to pre-announce a direct mail drop. You probably have a cluttered inbox for email, and there's also clutter in the physical mailbox. So pre-announcing your direct mail or catalog with an email picturing the mail piece can really help you stand out. Or you can follow up with an email after you've assumed that the mailing has been received. And, of course, you can look at your seeds and your decoys, and when they arrive, you know that that's the appropriate time to start capitalizing on that activity. So here's an example from Chico's, the women's apparel company. They've integrated their direct mail catalog, email, their website homepage, and their Facebook and Twitter presence. And it's not a cookie-cutter approach. In this particular instance, they were using Diane Keaton as a spokesperson, but we see her in different outfits, and the messaging is different. As a matter of fact, Twitter and that points you to Facebook. And on Facebook, there was a sweepstakes, so they were also doing some data collection and getting people to sign up for the email program. You could also think, if you're a catalog marketer, of leveraging the back cover of your catalog. This is an example from Hancock's of Paducah, and they sell fabrics for people that sew. On their back cover, they promote their email program. The copy says, sign up for our email newsletters to find out more about more specials and sales. And the company reported that this really did work for them and helped them boost their email list. Here's a different example, and I'm really using the U.S. Postal Service as an example. Most of you know that new movers are a great target for any marketing efforts, and I thought this particular instance was interesting. The CEO of Vertical Response, they're an email service provider, moved, and she went to the post office to update her address. While there, she allowed the U.S. Postal Service to share that move information with Williams-Sonoma. And Williams-Sonoma was on the ball. She received an email from the company 3 days later, and that was followed up with a postcard and a coupon. Oh, let me show you the coupon. There you go. Here's an example using Redbox the movie and game rental kiosks that are ubiquitous, easy for me to say. They have over 27,000 locations. So mobile is very important to their communication strategy since their kiosks are unmanned. And SMS subscribers are a part of their text club, and they receive a free promo code each month, along with information about company deals not exceeding 2 messages a week. All of their mobile efforts are based on the overall goal of fostering a personal connection. If you look at the top portion of the slide, they've got 3 million fans on Facebook, and their email file is 30 million strong. 30 million email addresses. Just amazing. So they put together a promotion called 10 Days of Deals, and, of course, they promoted it in every channel, so their email group also received this particular campaign, where actually the objective was to get people to sign up for that text club. And they used their retail presence, they used Facebook, they used email, they used SMS, and good public relations. So the media also picked up on the campaign, and Redbox was featured in about 1,000 traditional and online media outlets. So, and as you can see from the results, they created new subscribers, and they also cemented that loyalty. Here's a restaurant example from Ted's Montana Grill. The national restaurant chain, has 44 locations in 16 states, and they needed to show consumers that they had a new style and a new menu. So they put together what I think is a great integrated campaign. They advertised in newspapers with ads and FSIs, or freestanding inserts, in regions with a Ted's location. Many of the ads used a QR code, and their call to action was scan the QR code with your phone to receive an exclusive offer. Of course, a different code was used in each region for tracking purposes, and when the customer scanned the code, it brought them to a mobile landing page. That page featured a call to action to sign up for their email program so that they'd receive a coupon for a free order of onion rings, 5 fields that they captured information, of course a product image, and some sharing buttons. They also created and placed online banners on local websites such as newspaper websites in their target regions. They also kept their audience on Twitter and Facebook in the loop. The campaigns were mentioned on each social network, and followers of the company could take action by clicking to the landing page. And in the welcome email, they included that coupon offer. So as you can see, they created new SMS subscribers. 44,000 people actually did redeem those coupons in the restaurant. And, of course, they were also just boosting awareness. You might not have considered how to integrate email and search. First, if you're running pay-per-click campaigns, make sure that when people click through to the landing page, that there's a way for people to sign up for emails. I know that's not the primary reason for the pay-per-click campaign, but it will extend the efficiency and productivity of your program. If you really want to be sophisticated, you can also use the search term that brought people to your site in your subject lines as a follow-up. Second, we'll look at an example on the next slide of integrating search terms with subject lines. And third, if you've got a newsletter, of course you want to make sure that the content from that newsletter is on your site, because that's going to boost your organic search rankings. Here's an example from Crate and Barrel. Their email promoted up to 50% off during their summer sale, and they also coordinated their keyword buys to match up. We touched on coupons earlier. Well, as you know, shoppers love deals, and coupons will increase sales. I like this Kohl's subject line, "Print this shopping pass. Extra 15% off everything." And coupons are perfect for those using mobile devices. In fact, in 2012, 28.7 million will redeem a mobile coupon, and that represents 13.5% of the population over 18 years of age. That's according to eMarketer. Of course, email can also be used to drive store traffic. Here, CVS was offering flu shots in their pharmacy locations. Plus, if someone got a flu shot, they also got 10% off any additional purchases. This was a nice service reminder email, plus, obviously, a sales generator for them in their retail locations. Many retailers will promote the convenience of ordering online and then picking up the item at the store. Of course, for consumers, it saves shipping and handling, and that's something that we know that shoppers always love. Well, stores are particularly crowded on Black Friday. As a matter of fact, I would never go. I'm afraid of all the crowds. So this email from Sports Authority focuses on easy in-store pickup. It encourages people to shop online but pick up their orders at the local store. And there's a big emphasis on skip the lines, which I think is a good benefit, pretty strong promotion. Many retailers invest in Sunday supplement advertising. To leverage the investment, Radio Shack also makes their local flyers available on Facebook. And at the bottom of each page of this section, there's a call to action. To sign up for the email list. I don't think that's clearly visible, but I'm not knowing what I'm doing. Here's the call to action to sign up for email. So make sure that that is something that you do on Facebook. It can be a nice stimulator. And some of the results that I've seen with clients is that if people sign up for the email list on Facebook, that often your opens and click-throughs are even stronger than from your regular, the rest of your list. Here's a portion of an email from Barnes & Noble, and they're promoting a mobile app that's really neat for store shoppers. You can point the phone at any item in the Barnes & Noble store and take a picture of it. Then shoppers get instant information about the title, including descriptions, editorial reviews, and customer ratings. Plus, Barnes & Noble sweetened the offer with a free coffee for anyone who've downloaded the app. Nice way of driving store traffic. Okay, we're coming down the home stretch, and we've been focusing on consumer marketing. I'd like to very briefly touch on B2B marketing. Most of the focus of B2B is nurturing and qualifying leads to bring them through the purchasing funnel, as we discussed in the beginning of the presentation. And I love the concept of scoring leads. The main idea is to qualify leads over time by assigning points. The more point a lead accumulates, the more ready that lead is to be turned over to sales. It starts with assigning points based on what you know about them. This information might be gained when somebody registers at the site to get a white paper, or also a marketer could overlay data from a third-party provider if they've at least got some information about that individual. So let's assume we sell email deployment services. If the title of the person who registered was Director of Marketing or Director of IT, we might give them 4 points because they are clearly in the decision-maker role. If they're managers, maybe we'd give them 2 points. If they're a marketing coordinator, we might give them 1 point. And if they're a student, we might give them minus 50 points because we would never want to turn that kind of a lead over to sales. You might also assign points based on other factors such as company size, functional role, the source of the email address, and more. B2B companies make extensive use of email to engage leads and move them through that funnel. In general, depending on where they are in the funnel, companies will provide different content and information. And we've touched on this earlier. I'll be a little bit more specific here. So in the early awareness stage, the individual's gathering information. So marketers need to educate those individuals. So it might include online demos, white papers, ebooks, webinars, YouTube content, and other thought leadership resources. When the lead reaches the interest stage and begins the evaluation process, communications might include buyer guides, seminars, live demos, technical white papers, and RFP templates, or industry information to help structure the research. And as they finally move from the evaluation stage to the commitment stage, they're looking for information such as product comparisons, free trials, case studies, pricing, and company-specific information to help that final evaluation and reaffirm that you're the right selection. So going back to scoring leads, every action that the lead takes would add additional points to their score. For example, registering for a webinar might give them 3 points because they were interested enough to take the action to register. If they actually attend the webinar, you might give them an additional 5 points since they're really engaged with your company. By the way, all the point scores that I'm using here are clearly arbitrary. There's always a love-hate or a push-pull relationship between marketing and sales. And again, with lead scoring, the underlying principle is that marketing only wants to turn over to sales very qualified leads. And email and integrated tracking with the website can really help make this a reality. By the way, there are marketing automation services such as Acton, who is our sponsor today, that specialize in this type of offering. So let's look at one final example. Obviously, the B2B buying process is much longer than B2C. And here's an example of a 3-month series of emails. Note that we're only looking at one particular path. Depending on the topic of interest, initial lead scoring, and subsequent activity, our marketer probably wants to use rule-based dynamic personalization to deliver that right message to the right person at the right time. So we're looking at one scenario here. Another lead might actually see a very different scenario that's laid out. So here we see a nice mix of content, personalized emails from sales, white papers, a phone call, webinars, product demos, and more. And again, as individuals interact with each of these emails and click on links, go to the website, look at certain, for example, downloading white papers, those actions, again, would give them additional points to make sure that they're sales ready. So that's it, folks. I hope that this brief period of time I provided you with some inspiration. And, of course, it's all about data. Make sure to measure everything you do and figure out how that measurement can help you spot your winners and your losers, both in terms of your campaigns and in terms of the individuals who are interacting with you. So now it's time for questions.
Thank you very much, Reggie. And for everyone listening, we're going to go into a little bit of Q&A now. So if you have any questions for Reggie Brady, please enter them in the Q&A box below, and we'll get to as many as we can before the end of our 35 minutes here. So we still have about 10 minutes left for questions, so a good amount of time if you have anything you want to ask. And, Reggie, the first thing I wanted to ask was you had talked earlier about coupons, about mobile coupons via email. Now, how do you recommend that emailers change the way they handle their emails at all in order to provide those coupons?
Yes, I do, and you raise a good point because I didn't really cover it in any detail. The one example on the mobile phone that I showed, that was just simply an email that the recipient happened to open on their mobile device rather than on their desktop device. It is amazing looking at some of the research today. and even working with clients, many clients are now seeing about 35% of their emails are being opened on a mobile device. And the rules of the road have changed in terms of email design to make sure that if somebody is opening and viewing the email on that small screen, that it's an optimal situation. I'll just mention a few things to keep in mind. First of all, there should be, obviously, because there may be some display problems, particularly with platforms like BlackBerries, and even Android phones don't necessarily render everything properly. iPhones just are almost perfect. But so first of all, you might want click to view online and even click to view mobile at the very top. You want to keep your emails narrower than you used to in the past. Going back to the good old days about a year and a half ago, a typical width of an email campaign might be about 720 pixels. Well, that's way too much, and it will not display very well on that small screen. So I like the idea of keeping it somewhere around 500 pixels in width. It can be a little higher than 500. You can go up to about 550, but just make sure that it's narrow. No longer do three columns really work because, again, you've got that small screen to deal with. So at the very most, you want two columns, and I would keep the smaller column on the right-hand side, because if there is a problem with display, at least they're going to see your main information on the left-hand side. So those are just a few ideas, but do keep in mind the impact of mobile. And before I leave the topic, one of the things that I've also seen in some of the research is that engagement opens and click-through rates on mobile are generally not as high as somebody reading an email on a desktop or on a regular device. And I think part of the reason for those lower opens and clicks and engagement is that it's not a good experience. So try and make it as good an experience as possible.
Okay. And tying into that, one of our listeners wants to know, you just said that, you could still use a two-column layout to your email with it if you have one of the columns is very small, but is two columns better or worse at this point than one column, in your opinion?
Many people feel that it should be one column at the very top. I'll give you a personal story. I'm involved with a group called the Direct Marketing Club of New York, and we send out event emails. And we've decided that we are using that second column on the right-hand side, which gives all of the details of the event itself, and we use the much larger column on the left to describe, to give information about what the event is all about. Because I like the idea of organizing information. If people have to scroll down forever in one column to read your information, it can be more difficult. But again, I would not put critical, really important information on that right-hand side. I'd make sure that that's on the left.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of e-receiving in all, for ads and offers?
I don't know what e-receiving is.
E-receiving. And I'm sorry. This is a question from one of our listeners today.
Receipts.
Receipting, yes.
E-receiving. Okay. I think that's it's a fairly new trend, and I think it's very interesting. I've actually gone to stores. They ask me if I'd like the e-receipt. I say yes, and I, get the email, which is nice because I can save that information very easily. And the other thing that I notice in the e-receipts that I receive is that they're also asking me to sign up for their email program, because a receipt does not really mean permission to send additional emails. Unless they ask at that, at the cash register, and make that one of the conditions.
Okay. Now, actually, that brings up a really good point, which is, at this point, what is permission to send someone an email, even just an email to join your list? If someone is, if someone sends an email into your company asking a question, does that give you permission at this point, do you think, to contact them by email?
I do. I tend to be a little bit loose because if you're following all the good basic principles, you're going to have an opt-out link, adjust your preferences in every email that you send out. I mean, really, you must have the opt-out link according to CAN-SPAM. But as long as that individual has raised their hand in some way and indicated that they're interested in your company, for example, in B2B, if you go to a trade show and you put your business card in for a drawing, that to me, you know that you're giving them your contact information. You know that that company wants your contact information so that they'll be back in touch with you. And I also think in B2B, the rules are probably even a little bit looser than in B2C. The one thing I would do in the B2C world is if somebody wrote in and asked a question and you responded, I would send them a welcome message and make sure that that welcome message says we have added you to our email list. There's wonderful things that you're going to receive from us. We want to keep you up to date on our promotions, our new products. And, oh, by the way, you can easily opt out at any time or change your preferences.
So so especially in B2B, you would go ahead and add them to the list, but with a welcome message, giving them a chance to. So that's really an opt out, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
B2B is a very, very different animal, as long as there is some kind of interaction with the company, I absolutely think it's fine.
All right. And that is about all the time I think that we have for questions today. Reggie and I are going to go out into the networking lounge as well in a minute. So if you'd like to join us there and ask any questions to Reggie directly, please do so. I'll put a little introduction message in there so you can see where we're starting. Use the hashtag #email so we can recognize those questions as relating to this session, please. On behalf of Target Marketing and Printing Impressions, as well as our sponsor, Acton Software, I want to thank you for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during the presentation, we encourage you to go to visit the networking lounge, where you can also chat live with the other attendees at the show. There's actually been quite a bit of conversation going on there today. Please also visit the info booth and fill out our show survey to let us know how your experience has been today. Lastly, don't forget to take a look at the rest of the agenda for what's going on today. We have several wonderful sessions still lined up, and we encourage you to view as many as you can. Remember, if you miss anything today, the on-demand environment will be available starting on Monday, and it'll be available for 3 months, so you can come back and view any of the sessions at your leisure. Thank you very much. Have a great day.